Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
Well, I'm good. For those listening to the live version, you heard a little guffaw there.
Are we adding this one to the thesaurus of aging languages or dying languages? Which one is it?
A guffaw. Yes, we had to restart the intro because we didn't have the recording going here, so... We'll cut all this out in the podcast. Nobody will hear it.
Paul is the perfectionist, you know?
I am.
And if it's not just right, by God, he will do it again.
and again.
And we just experienced that. This is why they call it live radio,
that's
right?
It, exactly.
There you go. Things could just, all kinds of stuff could happen. Glad to have everybody here. I just want to take a minute, and I was just talking to Paul. It's like, I can't believe it. Seems like we just started this thing yesterday. And yes, it's been only like a month and a half, but we're like 8-9 episodes. I mean, we're doing this every week.
Many. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, wow. Who knew that we had that much to talk about?
I thought a couple shows, maybe, you know.
Yeah, I expect my mom to call in at any moment right now and say, I've known that for the last 50 years. You just won't stop talking. So for those who are joining us, welcome. We're glad to have you here today. And we got a great show for you. And I wanted to also let everybody know that we now have a bunch of the shows. We're almost caught up on our past shows, and you can listen to them at their podcasts. You can go to rodgantos.podbean.com.
And like that's Jack and the Beanstalk, right?
Just like Jack and the Beanstalk. And it's RAADGHANTOUS.pod. Bean.com, and I'll give this thing out again.
Have we set it up on iTunes yet? We got to get you an iTunes.
No, we need to set it up on iTunes.
All right, we'll get it on iTunes soon, and then you can download it directly from the iTunes store. And the new Apples actually have a podcast app that comes with them right on the home page. You can just hit that, and you can find it and subscribe to it.
Yes, and for those who are not Apple friends,
forget you guys.
You know, it's okay. You know, I this is like a support session here. I will stand up, say hello. My name is Rod, and I'm an Android user.
That's true.
But you know, it's okay. We like all platforms as long as people listen to us.
Right.
Hello. Are you there? You're listening.
Hello.
Okay.
Yeah. Hello.
It's great for binge listening too. You barely
binge
age.
Listening.
Yes.
You know, you laugh at that. We haven't identified you. Identify your guest so we know
okay.
who that
well, you know, I actually,
is.
You know, Paul,
and then I'll comment on that because we've had.
Don't you think it was interesting that she used the word binge, given what the topic is that we're going to talk about?
Yeah, I thought about that.
Okay.
Yes.
So, the voice that you just heard, everybody, is Sandy Lyons and Rescue, right?
Rask.
Yes. It sounds so. What's the origin of the last name?
It is French.
That's what I thought.
Yes.
Rasque, right?
That is
and
me.
It's Rask.
It is Rask.
So Sandy Rask, and she is here with us today. We're going to be talking about nutrition. We kind of touched a little bit on that last week with Chef Louis Esguera, right? I think it was Esguera. Mm. Louis, I'm sorry. I know you're here. You're listening. I just
nobody's going to come on this show. After
I know you as Chef Louis, and that's the coolest name. So Chef Louis was here, and we were talking about that too. And we got into all kinds of presidential, you know, naughtiness when it comes to food.
Yeah.
But you know, when we expect it, we will have him again. He'll be here in person. As long as they let him out of jury duty.
And as long as he brings food.
And oh, yeah, Louis, by the way, again, you need to bring food. Because, you see, Sandy today kind of raised the bar.
She did. Way up there.
Like, I mean, it's like yeah. right up there, you know.
Some would say the cocktail bar.
The cocktail bar.
Ooh, even. I like that
at
even
12
better.
O'clock.
She brought these incredible smoothies, green tea smoothies, and they have no dairy in them, which is a big deal in our household because my wife is highly allergic. Not just, you know, can't tolerate it, but allergic to dairy, to lactose.
She wants everyone to know that.
She wants everybody.
Thank you for sharing that, Paul.
You can go look up Jan at...
call 1-800...
honey.
What's your wife's name, Jan?
Jan. Yeah,
you can okay, Jan, 1-800-LOCKSMITH, change the locks.
Yeah, thanks for telling everybody.
We're kind of in the room with him. We can't leave, but would change the locks.
Actually, I was a restaurant writer for a while for the Riverside Press Enterprise many years ago. And to feed we love going out to restaurants. So I used to go and get fancy meals and get them for free because I'd write about them. And so it seems like every restaurant in town knows us when we come in because we have to give them this long litany of things. She can't have this. She can't have this. She's a vegetarian. She won't do this. She can't have lactose. She's allergic to this and chocolate. And all. So, yeah, she's got lots of problems. Well, she's well known in the restaurant community.
And if she wasn't, she is now.
She is now.
Thank you,
so
Paul.
So she's used to this.
Ladies
she's
and gentlemen, we will have a show, I promise, on maintaining marriages and relationships and do's and do nots.
Yes.
We might have to lock Paul out of the room.
Did I cross the line here today?
Yeah, okay, it's okay. Right. So let's get back to our guest, shall we, Paul?
Let's do that.
Okay.
Oh, time's up.
Time's up. Show's over. We're trying to get advertisers, Paul. Okay, so let's not the Mutton Jeff show here.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's an old reference.
Wow.
Okay.
What was in those smoothies here?
Yeah. Yeah. The spike. So why don't you tell us what's in the smoothies, Cindy? Oh,
the smoothies are so good. They're coconut milk, ice, water, pure maple syrup.
Oh, that's the key.
Yeah.
Pure maple syrup.
Green tea matcha powder.
Oh.
Great antioxidants in it. And sea salt.
So many people gag when you say green tea, and I love it. I've had green tea ice cream. I've had other things. I think green tea is a fabulous flavor.
Yeah, it's all about getting the green tea.
She's looking away from the mic like when we told her not to look away from the mic.
Do not look away from the mic.
I'm trainable, I swear. Okay, just,
Stay close to the mic.
Put the smoothie right by the microphone. And I won't,
But it is interesting because I could taste the salt, and I'm one of those people that I've never had a sweet tooth, so to speak. Mm. I'm a salt fiend, right?
Yeah.
And so I find that people sometimes are either or one way more than the other. And so for me, that was like, oh, that's kind of cool because of the salt. Don't go there, Paul. I can see the idea.
Not a word.
I heard the snicker, and I'm cutting you off.
No.
I believe that those preferences are all very trainable, and it's more brain and palate than it is, true, preference that you're born with.
No, I can see that. I mean, I grew up in the Middle East, and because of the temperature.
Is that near the Middle West that I grew up in?
No.
No.
Okay. No. Nowhere. I can assure you, I didn't grow up anywhere near where you grew up.
I grew up in the Midwest. And you said the Middle East. It sounds like they're kind of the same.
The Midwest, yes. That's sort of like, North Dakota? Where is the Midwest?
Michigan,
okay.
And I feel in the middle here. I grew up here in Southern California. Like, I'm Switzerland, basically, in this room.
Well, but that's why we're dependent on you, the quote-unquote Fruit Loops of the West Coast, to actually show us the right way of eating.
What was it like when nobody was here?
Oh, such a beautiful thing.
Oh.
Yes.
I think she just told us to pack our bags, right?
Okay.
So, but I grew up in a place where, humidity, high temperatures, pretty much I had to deprogram myself from literally grabbing the salt shaker every time I sat down to eat because the assumption is I was just going to need that salt.
Yeah. That's what we did in Michigan. Everybody puts salt on their food before they even started eating.
He has a bunch of carnivores in Michigan, right?
We are.
You actually, didn't you just make allude to the fact that your wife was vegan or something?
Yes.
Was a negative thing, like a strike against her?
Yes.
Well, now I understand. See, it's all coming together now.
It's all fitting together.
Yes.
Yeah,
Paul,
she's one of those.
Paul is definitely representing the Midwest. Really good.
Meat and potatoes, that was it. There was nothing else on the plate.
Well, back in the day, meat and potatoes was good, because you were raising your own beef, you were, growing your own potatoes, you knew where everything came from. It's a little harder today.
So give us a little background about yourself, because I know you from a while, and I know that you're taking a different approach recently to from your professional approach, should say, prospects or pursuits, but you used to have you've been in the senior industry for a while, and you used to be on the care side of it, correct?
I did. So I've always had sort of two resumes. I've had my professional resume, and then I've had my personal chef resume. So I've been a personal chef for about 20 years, and it wasn't until the last couple years in senior care that I merged the two. So I literally taught probably close to 300 caregivers how to cook.
Wow.
Very cool. And and your academic background is also in nutrition, right?
It's all business. It's in health. So I have a finance degree. I have a healthcare administration master's degree. It's mostly business. My entire food love, food training, and food knowledge is self-taught and University of the TV Food Network.
And who were your personal...
The University of the TV Food Network.
Yes.
Who were your personal chef? Is this like famous rich people or you were a personal chef for?
No. I do a lot of... over the years,
very good
I've done...
question.
Yeah, it is
that's
a good
that's
question.
That's the cool thing about what I guess you still do, but what you were doing more so full-time
before. Mine was more meal deliveries. It started literally out of my own kitchen when my children were quite small. I'd start cooking for myself and for my kids, and then my friends would come over who were doing kitchen remodels, and they wouldn't have access to that, and they're like, what are you making tonight, Sandy? And I'm like, I don't know. I think I'm going to try some black bean and poblano chili and maybe some fresh cornbread. Mm. And they're like, what would you take? You know, how much money would it take to get you to double what you're making? And so I literally started that way in my own kitchen. And it grew to the point where it maxed my kitchen. Then I'd go out and do cooking classes, and I started doing cooking demonstrations. And I've done just a variety.
Now there are chains that do that. I've forgotten the name of them, but which you can go get.
Oh, yeah. You either go in and you prepare all the food for the week, and then you take it, and you do it in their place, or you actually have uncooked, like prepared and ready to heat meals that you pay top dollar for, actually.
There are a lot of services like that out there. I kind of diverged from that and did a lot more. I used my culinary skills in charity. I would donate dinners, multi-course dinners for, you know, my favorite charities, and it was just a way to give back and stay connected. I find food very therapeutic.
I remember you. For those who've known you also for a while, just to kind of connect the dots for them, your company name actually at that moment in time when I first met you, actually that was kind of a cute name. What was the name of the company?
Little Rascals.
Little Rascals.
Yes. I still have that. It's Whole Food Unscrambled.
Whole Food Unscrambled.
Yes.
That's pretty
so
funny.
Now,
that's cute.
Now what I do is much more educational. Like, I'll develop shopping lists for people because so many people now, and I found this in the senior industry, have food intolerances, food allergies, food likes and dislikes. And
Can you come over and help my wife, Chien? We've just listed all her allergies and dislikes
and
problems.
And you know how I would do it is I would ignore all of her allergies and figure out what she can eat and what she likes to eat and develop shopping lists from that.
Right.
And then create menus and lists and food from what you have in your cabinet.
Well, and I think also as you age, you develop certain things that you didn't have allergies towards, I think.
Yes.
Or they, you know, it's kind of like the same as when you're younger and you grow out of allergies over time. I think as you get older, your tolerances for different things changes.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the things that I find fascinating because we design restaurants. We're sort of involved in food and beverage. One of our clients is Juice It Up. I just name dropped there. So Frank, who I'm going to see tomorrow, I just name dropped.
Ka-ching! There we go.
I just name dropped. But really, you can tell when people are conscientious about providing more than just combustible elements on a plate. Okay.
Combustible
Yes, you know why? Because when
what kind
you
of food
eat,
are you eating?
Because when you eat, well, you
you're
know
really
what?
Eating
you know,
hot food.
You know what? Let me just say this. I used to eat stuff when I was in college that if I ate today, it would be combustible. And I'm going to leave it at that, right?
We all did.
Yeah, we don't want to get in trouble with any kind of like regulatory agencies here. I'll just say combustible.
And then add alcohol on top of it.
And then add alcohol on top of it. And how did
and
we
light it.
How did we tolerate that? You know, I mean, how was it that I basically all kinds of wacky stuff that basically would rip my interiors to shreds and then added alcohol to the mix.
Yeah.
And then when I woke up in the morning, felt, you know what, I need to just eat some more of that stuff to absorb the alcohol. You know, I mean,
right?
It didn't sound that luxurious at the time and definitely didn't feel comfortable the
next day. Didn't sound far-fetched. It made sense.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you know,
Denny's
2 o'clock in the morning and a whole basket of fries and, you know, to absorb all the alcohol we just had.
I went to the University of Michigan way back in the 70s. And we had
you had to go cut your food off from the field.
Oh my goodness, it was way back. And we
slaughter a cow, push over.
Tip a cow. We used to tip a cow.
Yeah.
So we had a pizza place called Pizza Bob's, and Pizza Bob's whole spiel was they would put anything on your pizza. Now you can imagine a bunch of college kids have been up all night, you know, the things they would come up with to put on, you know, an old sock or something on the pizza. They'd put anything on the pizza for you here.
Yeah.
So talk about pressing the limit. I mean, we used to just eat the most bizarre combinations possible. We'd order it just to see if anybody'd eat it.
Right, exactly. It was you know what? That's a great point, Paul. It was like, hey, let's see how far you can push it.
Yes, right? Right.
Let's just see how far you're tolerant. You know, like, before you absolutely make a beeline to the bathroom and, you know, and you just don't come out of there for 2 hours.
Yep.
Let's see how far we can push you.
And there are there's a guy on YouTube that does this now. Will like eat anything you tell him to eat. I'm sure there's lots of people like this.
On YouTube that you basically can submit requests to, like, hey, try this combination.
Yes, exactly.
Seriously.
And they will eat the most bizarre things, and then you laugh and say, oh, I can't believe it.
It's a wonderful new world.
I went to Cal State Fullerton, so I'm a local girl. Mm-hmm. And before Juice It Up was actually at Cal State Fullerton, it was Noggles for the midnight runs because they were open 24 hours. So it was egg and bean burritos for me after drinking.
See, so the Juice It Up angle came back because, in fact, she's right. One of the very first locations for, I think Juice It Up wasn't it in, didn't come
was
out
it
of.
Was it Juice It Up there?
It came out of, I think, Cal State Fullerton.
Yes, wow. I believe
it.
Right.
All comes together.
It's all just, you know.
This is called native advertising. We're just working it right into the conversation.
Organically just growing out of things.
Very good guests do that for you.
So thank you, Sandy. Yes, make it very easy here. So I still think I want to know what you spiked the drinks with, because I know we usually have fun on this show, but not this.
Fun.
Not this much fun.
No.
So you can come back anytime as long as you bring some of these smoothies.
These are really, really good. I've almost had my whole smoothie.
You know why they're really good?
Paul, you're starting to suck on the cup now. You're like, you cleared the deck.
They're not as good as Juice It Up, though, but.
Well done. So let's kind of hone in on this thing.
Yes.
All right? So we used to be able to eat all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
And we didn't care. We didn't care.
And our body didn't care. I couldn't gain weight in those days.
Yeah, you didn't care. The body didn't care. Our health was, we got plenty of time to basically recover from all this stuff. And now we find ourselves in a situation where I think we all, to a certain extent, are very much foodies these days. Mm-hmm. I think the level of awareness of what you eat, including in the Midwest, Paul, is that, you know, people are a little bit more selective.
Yes.
Even when it comes to fast food, even when it comes with, you know, stuff that you can pick up on the go.
Right.
I think the options and the variety out there is very good. And legally now, I think a lot of places have to at least identify calorie counts and things of that nature. Now,
look at the success of Subway, just on a serious note. Subway is, I think, the largest franchise in the world. I may be wrong in that, but they're pretty close to it. They're bigger than McDonald's and some of the other
burger
chains.
Well, there goes the Juice It Up sponsorship opportunity. Sorry. Thank you for shooting us the next one.
But I think, in my opinion, because they do offer, they make it there, they make the bread fresh, all those gimmicks, but you also get a healthier alternative, and they're very big on calories, and that was their whole campaign with Jared and all the stuff to be able to lose weight and track the calorie intake that you do. I think that was a big part of it. And anywhere I would travel in the country, you'll see Subways.
Well, and it's a consistent thing that you can count on.
Fresh vegetables.
But there's things like Chopped now. There are places that are purely, 180.
Native foods.
Yeah, native foods. 118 degrees, which is all vegan. You know,
yes,
that's
we've had Jenny on.
And
here.
Then there's Chipotle. Yeah. I think Chipotle's done an even better job.
Look how successful they've become.
Well, and a lot of them are, you know, even if they are not in that industry, they're providing enough of a varied menu options to try to capture that market. And we've talked about this before. You know, at the end of the day, you've got a huge demographic called boomers, or people that are maybe, in this case, even younger than boomers, that have a more conscientious
approach. Wannabe boomers.
Yeah, wannabe boomers. Wow.
Oh,
talk about making boomers cool.
Yeah.
Paul is a boomer, and Sandy and I are wannabe boomers.
Just wannabes.
Yes.
Damn.
Yes. Just wannabes.
Wow. I actually just said damn on the air. Wow.
I think we've come up with a cool new term, though, because I think everybody wants to be the boomers.
Wannabe boomers.
Oh,
wannabe boomers.
My.
That's very cool. We're going to have to make something with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a consciousness of my body is my temple to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
I still want to have the good stuff and a little bit of the bad stuff. Don't put me on a regimented diet where I basically feel like I'm eating cardboard.
Right.
So I do have a sophisticated palate. I want interesting stuff. We touched on it briefly last time, Sandy, about how difference between, like, say, boomers and Gen Xers is that boomers look at ingredients. And the articles we looked at said they look at the ingredients for nutritional purposes, I think, versus like Gen Xers look at the ingredients from sort of a point of interest.
Yes.
Okay. I think boomers do the same. I think that's just maybe the degree of nutritional awareness that they're looking for.
And they say millennials look at it for bigger social issues, sustainability and other sorts
of
things, organic and other sorts of things.
Replenishable resources, you know, stuff of that nature. So I know that you, when you had your caregiving business, you actually trained caregivers that you were placing in homes.
Yes.
Right?
We were pretty revolutionary in what we were doing. I mean, there isn't any other training program out there that I know of that really teaches good technique to caregivers. And these are individuals that are working with a part of the population that is most fragile in many ways. They have some of the weakest immune systems just by virtue of where they're at in life. And we have individuals untrained, you know, feeding them daily. And I really believe that what you eat does reflect in your immune system and how healthy you are. And what I noticed working with this client base was that the 80 and 90-year-olds that did it really successfully, like didn't need much from caregiving, and that lived to the fullest, to their very last day, had a couple of things in common and good nutrition and just a good overall diet was the way they did it.
So what things in common do you think they
had? The other things that they had in common, they had some amount of exercise in their life, to whatever extent their body allowed. So movement, you know, moving around. I think the biggest thing that they had in common was a purpose for living. You know, raison d'etre, So if they have those, then it's really, you know, it's life well led.
And if you ask my 91-year-old aunt who lives out in the desert here, she would say, and a wee nip after dinner.
And a wee nip after dinner.
That's a reason for living.
You know, my grandmother, my grandmother, who was thin as a rail, this woman basically had a seamstress business with three or four other women working for her in Baghdad, in Iraq, in the 60s. Okay. I mean, she was a business owner. They would knock off fashion from every fashion magazine. You'd bring in a magazine, they would knock it off. Hand sewn sequences. I mean, just all kinds of trick stuff. And she, until the day she passed away, would always sneak off for a little scotch. And she had the cigarette never fell out of her mouth. I mean, you know, the people that basically cigarette somehow miraculously is cantilevered on the lower lip.
And it's always burning somehow.
And it's always burning somehow, right? The ash is like this long. That was my grandmother. And she, and you know, she was, I think, you know, instinctively, I looked at her as almost like the George Burns of the family. You know,
right.
She was phenomenal. And that little wee nip.
Yep.
Like Sandy was saying, that's part of your life, part of what you look forward to. That's why it's like I don't think regimented diets and nutritional supplements and things of that nature are definitely going to be. They've never been an appeal for me.
Yeah.
And I think as I get older, I'm going to get, you know, what we say, when you get older, you get less diluted. So if I didn't like it when I was in my 30s, I definitely ain't going to like it when I'm in my 50s, right?
Exactly.
So what? I know that you are not doing the care side of it anymore, as far as, you know, a professional pursuit, but you actually have now, your company name is
Wealth Center.
Wealth Center.
Yes.
WELLTH Center.
Ah, wealth, a little play on words there.
Well, okay. And I think you have a tagline, right? What's the tagline?
Yes, optimizing your greatest asset.
See? So it's interesting because
I'll tell you, it's the only asset when you get to be 80 or 90. It's the only one that matters. It doesn't matter what your bank account is. Doesn't matter what you've acquired. It matters if you're healthy. Not to go into often all my family stories, but I have a tendency to do that.
He does.
My mother.
No point stopping him.
My dad was an executive for Chrysler.
I'm just not going to look at him.
Wanted to retire. You look at me and then now get upset because you move from the mic. So my dad's ready to retire, and he keeps trying to get my mom to quit her job. She's not going to do it. She finally gets a horrible accident, gets struck by lightning, of all things, and just totally fried. She lived, but it totally screwed her up for the rest of her life.
Wow.
And now my dad would say, what good is this? We got all the money in the world. We got all the time. We've saved. We got everything to go, and we can't do anything.
Right.
Yeah.
We can't do anything.
Right.
And so those years were actually pretty bad because he had to become a full-time caregiver for her, and she developed things like Parkinson's syndromes and other sorts of things. And it was everything that they had worked for was gone. And that. Sorry, I'm getting choked up here, but it was hard because they had all the money, they had the plan, all the stuff we're talking about here, they're ready to go enjoy life now, and couldn't do it because, boom, they got struck by a terrible thing.
Well, and you know, we spent all this time saving, you know, and I'll use the word loosely, but, you know, like saving for being able to exercise some whatever, you know, wishes, desires later. Mm-hmm. Right? There is a lot to be said for the being in the now, yes. I think, right?
Amen.
And finding the balance, because you can't also be always in the now. You got to kind of plan a little bit. We have, right. You know, society we live in, you got to kind of make sure that you're covered.
And I think that's been the baby boomer curse. We've been too much in the now, so we've saved for nothing. You know, it's right. All just enjoy today and we'll figure it out tomorrow. So right. We've probably gone too far. The World War II generation, my parents came
from. The other way too far.
Yeah, you don't ever do anything. It's always tomorrow we're going to do this. We'll take the glassware out that we bought 10 years ago and use it next week at the party, but maybe not. You know.
So maybe that's what the mission for the wannabe boomers is. Is that it's not all the way like the World War II generation where it's like, you know, save everything, don't indulge anyway, because when you do, you better do it behind closed doors because the society will not accept it.
Yes.
Or the boomers that are basically saying, I don't need to save anything, I'm going to basically indulge all
extremely. Me, right
me,
now.
Me. Maybe the wannabe boomers are the ones that are going to find a little nice little balance between the two.
That would be great, because I think you've seen two extremes, at least in my lifetime, between the World War II generation and the baby boom generation.
Well, and still be having the conscious awareness of having experienced that through other people. Mm-hmm. See, I could sit there and refer to two or three people from each one of those groups that I know of directly, two, three degrees of separation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that's a kind of interesting take.
It is.
Well, so,
and I've never really heard anybody talk about that, but I think that is, I hope that that's the legacy that we leave them, because I think, you know, we were the children of the flower children. We went wild. We went crazy. We did all the crazy. We went not too far, I mean, not for us, but in retrospect, maybe.
We could have gone further.
We could have gone further, yes.
I think you see the same thing in healthcare today as well. You know, my clients, my 80 and 90-year-old clients, had almost no medications that they would take, the ones that did really well at the end. Mm-hmm. You see more of the boomer generation. We want it fixed. We want it now. We want to, you know, be back to work and back out playing very quickly. So they're very quick to pull the trigger on wanting medications.
Right.
But I think that comes to haunt them as we, you know, as we age.
Well yeah, because finding that balance, I think, is very important. The interesting thing about your story, Paul, with your dad and your mom, you know, is that you save so that you can then basically sit back and enjoy.
Right.
Right? And life, you know, what's the thing? You know, life happens when you make plans.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
So sometimes you don't have the opportunity now to enjoy the way you thought you were going to enjoy, assuming you have a clear idea what you would do to enjoy.
Right.
Which, you know, that means you need to, along the way, have done some thinking about it versus, I'll just think about it later. I'll have money in the bank. I'll figure out what I want to do later, but I'm going to do something,
right?
And then life throws you a curve, and all of a sudden the money that's in the bank now goes where?
Goes to healthcare, goes to
housing, yes.
And that was one of the things we talked about when you talked about shows before about taking care of older people, of finding facilities, nursing homes, and long-term healthcare, that you think you've got all this taken care of. And instead, the money that you've saved, I talked about this on the show, at the end when my father died when he was almost 93, and he started falling a lot, he was living alone, and suddenly it looked like I was going to have to put him in some sort of nursing home or long-term care, the last thing in the world he wanted to do,
right.
And the last thing I wanted to do, because it meant that all that stuff that he had accrued, which he was so proud he was going to leave me as a legacy, whatever, a house and some other things, all of that was suddenly going to go for one purpose, to change his diapers. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, my God. And my dad would look at me and he'd say, this is why I scrimped and saved my whole life, so that we can give this money to that facility over there to give me substandard care? No, don't put me there.
Well, and again, you know, I think it's so, we're so early in this. How do we take care of people, older people? How do we do it with dignity? How do we do it with you know, allowing for the individual nuances that differentiate people, both on ethnicity, on religion, or whatever.
This is why you scrimped and saved your whole life, so that the last few years you can be taken care of?
Well, and that is a perfect, perfect segue, because what Sandy is doing now, and Sandy, you'll speak to it when we come back from the break, is exactly that. We have an issue with how we deliver medical services. And it's the assumption is that you have no choice. It's only got to be one way or the other, right? And part of it is insurance agency driven. Part of it is medical, you know, large infrastructure industry driven. And what we like to think on this show is we'd like to give people an opportunity to maybe consider other options that are not really covered a lot.
Didn't know there were any.
Yeah, and so we'll be back and with Sandy Lyons Resk.
Rask.
Rask. That A is what's throwing me.
I know.
Thing,
you want
right?
to go Rod.
I want to go like
yeah, Ross.
Rask. Rask. And we'll,
this is from a guy that has two A's in Rod.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Gosh.
And he's the rad like.
Yeah. See? There you go. Thank you. I think we'll leave it on that high note, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Boy, that's a dream to make your house a home for a lifetime. I like that.
Okay, Paul, I have heard from our monitoring agency.
Have they? Have they called in?
AKA my wife.
Yes.
Who says that you and I are way off track and we're basically just having a house party here and we need to give time for our guests.
I think so. I don't think she's talked too much this
okay,
segment.
Okay, so not to make the same mistakes that Paul made with his wife and her dietary habits. Honey, we will be right. We're going to hand the mic over now.
You got it.
To Sandy.
Oh, my goodness.
So, Sandy, empowered by my wife, please let us know about what it is that you're doing now and how your efforts are, like we said before the break, actually helping Paul snickering in the corner, helping people and actually professionals like the doctors and the medical, you know, that don't necessarily want to deal with insurance as heavily as they have in the past. How are you finding that balance?
Excellent. Bear with me. I'm going to go on a little winding path just a little bit. What I found, again, going back to my days taking care of seniors, was that there were just seemed to be so many pieces missing, and you all have touched on many of them on this show already. But the healthcare system seemed to be the most difficult. There is a sense in our healthcare system that the only time we access it is when we need it, when we're sick. You know, that we wait till it gets bad enough, emergent enough, and we either go to a doctor's office or the emergency room, and we only see somebody professional when crisis hits.
Well, there is an underlying philosophy, I think, or at least an approach that we've had on the show. I know I actually am very averse to the word reactive. Mm-hmm. I really embrace and like the word proactive a lot more.
Yes.
And I think a lot of our lives, the way, you know, when we're rushing on doing a lot of different things, a million things in the course of the day, kids, whatever it is,
yes,
that we get into the rhythm of being reactive.
Yes.
When something comes up is when we respond to it, and in very few things, maybe financially is one of them, you know, buying maybe the food on the weekend, which not everybody does, and preparing your meals for the week. You know, those are things that maybe we do proactively. We put sun lotion on, maybe.
Yes.
But that's actually a perfect example. There are people that basically lotion at home before they go to the beach, and they have the suntan lotion with them. And there are people that basically only put on the lotion when they have been sitting in the beach and now look like a lobster and go, well, wait a minute, I'm getting a little red. I need to put some lotion on.
Yes.
Right? So I can say for myself, the proactive approach is 100 times better than a reactive approach.
Right.
So let me ask you a question. Do you do preventive maintenance on your car? Do you pay for things before they break, like oil changes?
Absolutely.
Or other things? All right.
Yes.
Would you ever pay for preventive health care? Would you go see a health care professional if you weren't sick?
Well, that's the whole point, right?
Yes.
Is that the mindset in your own brain, you do that to your car, but you don't do it for yourself.
Right.
You're absolutely correct with that. And it's that needs to change. That piece needs to change.
Right.
Because when you go through medical school, most people don't know this because none of us have MDs in this room, is that you learn that 80% of diagnosis is based on history.
Yeah.
And only 20% on current symptoms.
Right.
So if the
Say that again. I mean, that's a startling statistic I would have never thought of. Say
so
that again.
80% of diagnosis is based on history.
Here's what we've observed with you in the past, and therefore we think that's what it is now.
If I may, let me expand on that for a second.
Yeah.
It goes beyond the medical profession, by the way. You know, I remember in a previous life for a split second, I actually have a degree in economics. And I remember going to graduate school, okay, and somebody telling me that there is no such thing as forecasting. That it's actually, so it should be called backcasting. Because we have this thing about collecting data, doing research, doing studies, and then extrapolating at possibilities based on case history. Mm-hmm. And in the medical profession, this is exactly the same thing.
The military always fighting the last war over and over again.
Over and over again. Wow, you just dated yourself there.
I
think we need some like Native Son or something playing on the radio there. But yeah, no, absolutely. So what can be done? What is being done?
Well, so when you think about it, if you're the only time you're showing up at the doctor's office is when something has gone wrong, that doctor has nothing to go on to actually, you know, diagnose you properly. So a lot of extra tests are done, extra medications are given out, not because the doctors are in any way inferior or not doing a good job, but the dynamics of the system are that they have 9.73 minutes to diagnose and treat you.
Wow. I think that's worth repeating as well.
Yeah.
How much?
Average, 9.73 minutes.
Is that because of the impulse? This is my own bias, so I'm going to frame the question. I'm going to create the answer. Isn't it so that they've hired people to increase the value of their practice and they brought in people, they've turned it into more of an assembly line. They themselves have tried to see more and more patients to produce more and more revenue, and in the process, my feeling is, shorten the amount of time that they'll spend with any one person.
You are halfway correct.
Okay.
The other half of it is the reduction in what they get per patient from the insurance side. So what you have are consumers that have absolutely no idea how much a doctor is paid to do the services that they're doing.
Yeah, I'll echo that. My physician in South County, I'm not going to say any names or whatever, but you know, they had their own private practice, and I had used to go to him when he had his private practice, and now he is part of a group.
Okay,
and I remember talking.
Common trend.
Yeah, I remember talking to him, and basically, the administrating arm of the group is what drives the scheduling. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily the medical practitioner who says, I'm only going to give
9.73 seconds.
I want to make more money here.
It's the administrator who says, I'm scheduling you to where you only have 9.73
seconds. Right.
Because that's all we get reimbursed for.
Exactly. So they put 25 to 40 patients on any single doctor's schedule in any single day.
Yeah.
So it's a tough thing to
I think
navigate.
including for the physicians, because, I mean, that really, you know, that makes them that, you know, the widget maker who's checking on that widget to your assembly line comment, Paul. It's not left up to the purview right there and then without the complexity of having to get approval and okaying the extra time, all this baloney.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to be fair because I think a lot of times, and it's not because my brother-in-law is a surgeon, but it, you know, and I have some doctors in the family, but it's because I think physicians, medical practitioners get maligned.
Yes.
Like they're the greedy person who's trying to get as many people through there.
That's the way it feels. Right. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I felt that. Like the doctor walks in and as soon as he looks at you, I'll give you a perfect example. My aunt, who's 91, goes to see doctors all the time because she's, you know, she's a little alone and she gets worrying. So she goes to see, and she's got medical insurance for life because of her thing. So she's not paying for it. And so she perhaps overuses the system. But on the other hand, I've been with her a couple of times, and the doctor comes in and starts writing up his notes before he's even looked at her. He's dictating, I saw, you know, so-and-so today and here and this. And one time she said, do you want to talk to me before you start putting your notes in here?
Right.
So it felt like, you know, he was just going through the motions and had already filed the request to be paid before he really did the work.
So what are the options out there that are different from that?
So there's a growing movement, and it's been building for the last 10 years, but it's really gaining popularity now, is this whole movement of direct pay or concierge-style medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So the
I've
doctors,
heard of this, yeah.
Yeah, so the doctors then decide, you know what, I don't want to see 25 to 30 patients a day. I don't want to have 3,000 patients in my book of patients that I care for that I don't know. I want to cap it. I think reasonably I can take care of 200 or 400 or 1,000 patients, and I only want to see half a dozen of them a day.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to book full one-hour appointments, and I'm going to, you know, give them my cell phone number so that if something happens after hours or on weekends, that they can call me, and we can triage it before it gets to that emergent point. I want to have conversations with my patients about truly what their family history is, you know, what their health history is, so that we can start doing much more proactive testing,
right,
you know, and cue our patients properly.
Okay.
So what I do is actually help the doctors from the business side of things set up this concierge-style practice. What kind of practice do you want, and how do you do it? And the only way really to do it is if patients private pay some portion of their healthcare cost.
So,
yeah.
concierge medicine. Mm-hmm. Is any of it paid by insurance?
It can be. It depends upon the way the doctor sets it up.
Okay.
So sometimes the doctor will take insurance reimbursement for the office visit itself.
Right.
But there'll still be a membership fee to be part of his practice.
Oh, I see.
Because you're getting that after-hours coverage, and you're getting hospital management if you're in there, and you're getting care coordination with specialists. So there's more than just an actual visit.
The reason why I'm asking, Sandy, is, okay, yeah. I like the approach. It's a lot more personable. It's almost a little bit more, if you will, old school.
Yeah.
You know, where it's about the care.
Yeah.
And the preventive sort of guidance, if
yes.
you will, before things get to be bad.
Yes.
You know, don't wait until I need blood pressure pills. Try to condition me earlier as
yes.
you see something, maybe in corrective behavior that would lead me to not have to.
Exactly.
Or at best, if I have a history of it in my family, for example, or I'm predisposed to it, to delay it.
Yes.
Right? Because, again, it's not necessarily only the inconvenience of being on that medication. It's also all the incremental cost that gets added, right?
Yeah.
Those things are not cheap. So, but with that being said,
yes.
I'm just playing a little devil's advocate.
Play devil's advocate.
Okay. How much of this is really affordable?
You know, it can be, because the beautiful thing about concierge medicine is that everyone defines it the way it makes sense to them. So the cost of it out of pocket could be anywhere from $400 a year to I've seen them as high as $25,000, but those are different kinds of products. But in the standard concierge, it runs about $400 to $4,000 a year, depending upon what other services the doctor does for you.
Okay.
Of those costs, those are out of pocket. It might be tax deductible depending upon your tax situation.
Okay,
it might be covered by your health savings account if you have one of those high deductible PPO plans. If you're self-employed, you have ways to write it in as an employee benefit for, you know, at the employees
in
your company. So there are ways to offset it but not get it fully covered. It can be, I think, affordable.
So tell me what the differences are. Like the difference other than the fact that you have more time with the doctor?
Yeah.
What kind of difference?
That's huge.
You have no time in the waiting room, because by booking one appointment an hour, you literally don't have to wait in the lobby to get into your appointment.
And that's huge because I hear every day more and more people have appointments, and then I'm like, okay, I'll talk to you an hour after your appointment,
mm-hmm.
and then 45 minutes, they're still sitting there waiting for their appointment because
and you haven't moved from the big waiting room to the little waiting room yet.
Yes,
you know it's
right. You go.
What was the point of me making an appointment?
Exactly.
Right. Yep.
Exactly. So that's the biggest thing. But the other is that you now have a relationship with your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he knows the good, the bad, and the ugly of who you are,
mm-hmm.
you know, and can help you make decisions. It's sort of like having a doctor in the family in a lot of
mm-hmm.
ways. You know, you go to a specialist. Let's say you go to a surgeon. We'll
mm-hmm.
pick surgeon because you have that in your family. They're trained to look for surgery options. You know, they're not trained to look at, you know, different things outside of surgery. So they're very good at what they do. But surgery may not be the right option for you.
Right.
How do you evaluate that? Nice to have another MD on your team to say, okay, we can look at surgery. We can look at different protocols. We can look at medications, different ways to treat the same issue.
That's what your primary was supposed to be in these health nets, you know, the PPOs and whatnot. So you're supposed to go to somebody. He's the gatekeeper, and he decides where to send you after that.
Talk about a term I hate.
Yeah.
Gatekeeper.
Gatekeeper.
You can't go to the next step until you get through the gatekeeper.
Exactly.
Keymaster? No.
Yeah. My father in latter years had he lived out in the desert, out in Palm Springs area, and he had a wonderful cardiologist who he really loved and who spent a lot of time with him, and he decided at the end he was going to go towards this concierge service. He did it because he said he didn't want to go through Medicare and all the other stuff anymore. He'd given up too much difficulty in time and paperwork,
right.
and he was going to give people, he thought this was a better model. My dad toyed with it, but it was about $4,000 a year, and win, lose, or draw, you're paying $4,000 this year,
right.
and at that stage in his life, he didn't think that he could do that, even though he was tempted to do it. Now, nobody talked to him about, and I don't know if there was any way
right.
for him to find other ways to offset some of that cost, but it sounded like an appealing model, but it did sound, to Rod's point, like it was something only for the affluent.
Well, that's the thing. I think the word concierge, like for me, my background in design started off with hotels, right?
Right.
When somebody tells me concierge, I immediately associate that with, the normal horde goes to the reception desk, and if I'm a special person, I get taken to the chair, to the sit-down chair versus stand-up counter,
right.
and I get concierge attention. So that's why I associate that as being a luxury product.
Right.
So what I'm hearing, though, is that driven by the physician's need to find different ways
yes.
to have a sustainable practice, without having to have the overhead and the hassle that comes with insurance and Medicare, Medi-Cal, offering the option for people to take on a program, like be a membership in a program, as long as the price point is right and as long as you have enough variety within that group to service my needs, as they change beyond general practitioner, for example.
Right.
Then that makes sense.
But that's where your insurance kicks in.
Right.
So if the general practitioner refers you out to a specialist, match it to the insurance, go to that specialist, and then you've got a general practitioner who actually helps coordinate. In a lot of cases, our general practitioners save money that are in the concierge program because they're going to try and keep you out of the ER, you know. And I think the first place that people go on the weekends when they have that emergent need and they're scared, they go right to the ER.
See, and that's where that word preventive, or proactive versus reactive.
But sometimes just having
there's a savings involved.
Having the doc on the other end of the phone at 10 o'clock on Saturday night going, I don't know, my heart's palpitating and I'm sweating and, he can talk you through that and decide whether the ER is the right place.
I actually do have a friend of mine and a client that's in the Corona Del Mar area that is a concierge doctor. Her practice is for children. And and there is a lot of need for that, especially with people that are traveling.
Yes.
So I do.
Kids get things, and you decide: do I really have to take them to the doctor, emergency room, or is this something that can wait?
Yeah, we have a lot of patients actually who have kids now who are going off to college, first time away from home ever, and having a concierge doc that can do an electronic house call to them in Boston or Washington or wherever they are at school makes the parents feel.
Do you think that's a coming trend where we're going to see the doc on our phone here rather than in person?
Oh, I don't even think it's a coming trend. I think it's an here and now.
But you also said something to me yesterday about doctors making house calls.
Absolutely. There are versions.
You heard me right, Paul?
What?
Doctors making house calls.
No. They stopped that
2015.
When I was a kid.
Doctors making house calls.
No, this is the return of the old-fashioned doctor that knows you, that knows who you are, that knows what you need, and will be there when and where you need him.
Good old Doc Smith who showed up at your house when you were sick.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of docs now coming out
Marcus
of medical
Welby.
School.
Marcus Welby.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
The music's playing in my head.
Oh, my gosh. No, but there are docs coming out of medical school now going, why do I want a big office?
Okay, so Sandy, we're going to...
A couple minutes left.
Yeah, I don't want to run out of time. If you're a physician that's interested in Sandy's services and some consulting with Sandy, or if you're somebody who's interested maybe in finding a physician...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how would you find them?
Could you give them their information, how they can contact you?
Absolutely. So you can contact me if you've got any questions about concierge. You can get me by phone at... Can I give out my phone number? Okay. I'm giving out my phone number. 714-745-0296. I text, I email, I call, or you can reach me by email at sandy@att.net.
Thank you, Sandy. That's awesome. And I do want to give a shout out to that doctor I mentioned because I know people will ask, especially with kids. It's Dr. Iman Bar, B-A-R. R, I think, is it one R or two?
Probably two, I would think.
Two R's. Yeah. And she's in Corona Del Mar. She's right on PCH. Dr. Barr is awesome. And if you got kids and you have that, definitely look her up. She's all over the internet. Thank you, Sandy. I think it's very important that we do realize that we always have options and that we can look beyond what we are bombarded with, maybe more so. It may need a little more digging, but there's options out there. And concierge wellness sounds like, as long as the price point is right, sounds like possibly a good option for some people. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only octalkradio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.